Welcome to the Your Turn to Fly podcast. This is the place where we help empty nesters rediscover passion and purpose in their next season of life. I'm your host, Thor Chalgren, founder of the Your Turn to Fly community, and I'm so glad that you're here. Every week, we'll be interviewing parents and experts, bringing you inspiring stories, insights, and practical advice so that you can move forward, find fulfillment, and make the next chapter in life your best one yet. Let's do greater things together. Welcome to the Your Turn to Fly podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I am especially excited for you to hear today's interview. My guest is Andrea Logan, and our topic is resumes and job searching. Whether you're a parent who is thinking about re-entering the job market, or maybe you have a college student who is thinking about internships, college jobs, or maybe even their first post-college job, I think this is a must-listen discussion. Andrea is a resume writing expert. Her account on TikTok, where she shares resume and career secrets, has over 278,000 followers. At her company, The Career Island, she helps people craft standout resumes and build winning job search strategies. In our discussion, we cover so many things. Here are just a few of the topics you'll want to take notes on in this interview. How long should your resume be? What specific sections you must have? How to deal with a gap in work history? How to language volunteer work? The importance of LinkedIn? And when is the absolute best time to send your resume in? And for college grads, Andrea recommends a specific job type that can make them an in-demand hire. So definitely share this episode with your college students who are beginning to look at the job or internship market. It's the beginning of a new year, and I have a question for you. Carl Jung said there is no burden greater for a child than the unlived life of the parent. So here's my question. Are you living your life? Do you have a purpose that excites you? What's the biggest thing you can imagine for yourself in 2022? I work with empty nester parents, helping them to discover a new, greater purpose. If you're in that season of life, I'd love to talk with you about what's next for you in 2022. I reserve a few sessions each week for free discovery calls where we talk about you and get clear on your dream and what's maybe stopping you from realizing it. Just go to discover.yourturntofly.com and schedule that free call. That's discover.yourturntofly.com. All right, I hope you enjoy my interview now with Andrea Logan. Andrea, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Back in California.
Well, good. I've been so excited about speaking with you because this, I feel like, is a time where a lot of people are finding themselves in a new place in life. I know certainly for empty nester parents, where maybe they've dedicated themselves to raising a family, now the kids are gone, and that parent is thinking, what's next for me? And they might be thinking about starting a business or maybe going and working for a company. So having a resume is probably a critical first step, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I get a lot of parents and older professionals reach out to me too, and it's been kind of wild.
Yeah. Well, you have a unique story in that your current career is something that you pivoted into at the start of the pandemic. I've seen you describe yourself in a way as a resume artist. Tell me about your pivot into what you're doing now.
Yeah, well, I used to be a daycare teacher whenever the pandemic hit and they started shutting everything down and pretty much the world shifted. I was a daycare teacher and I was in the potty training class and the 2-year-olds at a 24-hour daycare in a not great side of town. So it was really hectic and everybody was getting sick. Like literally everybody was getting sick and they didn't shut down the daycare. So I was like, I gotta go. I can't come back. So I never showed back up. I told them I got sick. I didn't, but it was just, there was no options. But I used to be a resume writer. Like even before that job, I used to be a resume writer. I used to do LinkedIns and help people who already had jobs get better jobs. Like I was working for this career services company and we would only help executives pretty much. And that's kind of when I got into the resume writing world, but I wasn't using my own skill sets to kind of do anything for myself because it didn't click until the pandemic started where I needed to work remote. And so I just kind of started posting content that I could do all this stuff. I could get people jobs. I know how to get people 6-figure jobs and break into any industry. And it really started booming extremely quickly. Like I was pretty surprised at the feedback, but I started realizing like, oh, everybody is losing their job right now, or they need a new job, or they want another job, or they want some type of income because the stimulus checks aren't getting sent out and they have bills and all this stuff was happening. And then from then on out, I got on TikTok and it was like a whole new world. So now I'm here talking to you.
It's interesting. I think in the last year that the situation has really opened a lot of people's eyes as to what their potential is. And maybe there are situations where people don't necessarily need to look for something new, but now they're thinking about it. So let's talk for a minute about who needs a resume, because if I'm going to go work for someone else in a company, say, I know I probably am going to need a resume to find that job. But if I'm starting out maybe my own business, I'm not sure I need one. So let's talk first about who should create a resume these days.
In my opinion, I think everybody should have a resume. I'm biased, but what happened to me is that I was just doing freelance writing gigs at first. So like I started doing a lot of statistics on resumes, how to get your resume opened, what's the best time to apply, how should you set it up, what should your subject line be, like all of this stuff, just Googling because I had like time since I wasn't working anymore to just kind of figure out what to do. And I saw this statistic that people generally open up their email boxes the most at around like 10:50 a.m. Monday morning. So I was like, oh, right. I was like, okay, that makes sense. Like when I start the work week or whenever I had an office and a desk, you know, Monday, I'm like, all right, let's start working. It's about after 10, like, you know, it's not right at 9 o'clock when I get there. I'm definitely not ready to go. But I'm just like messing around. And at about 10, almost 11, I'm like, okay, let's do some stuff. And I was like, wow, that's same for everybody. So I was like, well, if I just email my resume and cover letter late on Sunday night, I have the best chance of getting them to view it Monday morning when they're like ready to jump into their work. So I started doing that. Like I started creating my resumes the way I do with all my tips and tricks. And then I just sent in a bunch of resumes strategically to the email boxes of companies I was interested in that I found all across, you know, LinkedIn, Indeed, Google Jobs, wherever, ZipRecruiter. And I woke up Monday morning with like an email full of job offers. And that was kind of like the, oh, maybe there's something to what I've been doing this whole time, but I was never even like believing in myself enough to do.
Right.
And so everybody should honestly do that because you can get a lot of gigs doing that. Like you can just get people interested in you. So maybe you have a business and you have a resume, but it's a resume for whatever you do. You're not trying to like work there, but you're trying to like get some type of relationship established, and you can kind of show people your professional portfolio by doing that. You can have a business plan too, but it's easier to just be like, hey, this is what I've done, very simply. So I say, right, everybody.
So everybody could use it, whether they're intending to go into the job search mode or not. It's just a sort of statement of who you are and what your capabilities are at this point in your life.
Yeah, it works really well too in the email. I don't know why.
So we know that I need one. And you say that the reason that people, if they're looking to get hired, that they don't get hired is because they don't know how to write their resume. Mm-hmm. Let's say that the last time maybe I updated my resume was 20 years ago before I had a family. What has changed in the industry in the last 10 to 20 years, would you say?
I would say the biggest change in general, especially because even if there was a change, you know, 10, 20 within the last year because of the pandemic and everything, people don't understand that a resume is not just this place where you talk about where you've been and like your jobs and your school. Like, it's not like one page, black and white. Where did you go to school? Oh my gosh, I went to Harvard. Hire me. I used to have this internship. I was a volunteer here. I was a fireman. It's not that. Like, people don't actually care if you went to school or not. That's not really interesting to people, because there's a lot of people who have never been in a school and still have a good paying job. It's the way you market yourself. So you have to like set up specific, called resume assertion sections, but like specific sections on your resume to get people interested in what you could do for them. Like, your goal is to write your resume in the eyes of the beholder. It's not for you. Like, you shouldn't even be thinking about yourself. You should be thinking about the company, their values, their mission, and how to make them money, save them money, and save them time. So you come up with all these ways to talk about your skills, but in a way that is interesting to an employer. Like, you put yourself in the shoes of somebody who's in HR to get them to buy into you. People don't get that. They have no clue how to do it because they're not used to talking about themselves in a positive light. Like, most people will be like, oh, I don't really do anything. I answer the phone. That's the thing. Like, answering the phone is important. Like, it helps build strategic relationships, and it gets, you know, reoccurring buyers and all this stuff that people aren't thinking about. So there's a way to get people to be like, oh my gosh, I need you to work for me. But people don't understand. They think like, oh, I'm just putting my work history in the school I went to. Like, no.
So the first way that we have to think about this is not that I am talking about myself, but I'm coming at it from the perspective of, what are they looking for, and how can my skill set help them solve their problems or accomplish whatever result they're looking for?
Exactly. It's very much them, not me.
Right. It's funny. I think about my own history going back to one of the first jobs that I had. I literally got an interview because they saw my resume and saw my name Thor and said, we have to meet someone with the name Thor. Like, that's literally the only reason I got called in. But I'm sure there are things that in a resume, kind of the do's and don'ts. So let's maybe I'll just sort of go through a couple and tell me like your perspective on whether these are things that you do now that you avoid. So maybe the first thing that I think about, and I think this is, you believe in this, is that I'm going to create a specific resume for each job that I'm applying for. Is that something that how you approach it now?
Absolutely. Yeah. You do it. You make a puzzle piece fit into the company, you know? So like, I think that's one of the biggest don'ts, is to send the same generic resume to like absolutely every application. That's what most people are doing. And that's why they don't get the callbacks. Definitely make it different. Tweak it.
Okay. And do you put, I remember advice from years ago was putting an objective at the top of the page. Is that something that you still do or no?
Yeah, you can either call it like a couple of things. Like, for executive clients, I'll put like a career summary or a career objective, same thing. But for all of the resumes that we create, it's a professional profile statement. And it really just has to be like two to three lines, not a sentence. It's not a full statement, but like just two to three, something short, simple, to the point. And you kind of, it's like the thesis of your resume, because nobody's actually reading your resume. They're scanning it. So your goal is to make your resume scannable. So if you tell them exactly what they need to see, the job title, the years of experience, and like a couple of skills that are listed on the job post, just in the first two to three lines, you have a better chance of getting called back than everybody else who applied.
Okay. And does the length of the resume, one page, two pages, does that matter? What's your thinking on that?
My mission in life is to get everybody to have a two-page resume. I've done a lot of research on why two-page resumes get more feedback. So many people don't think that it does, but it's because they don't try it out. But HR managers and recruiters and people in candidate selection, they choose two-page resumes over one-page resume. They just do. It's like I believe it's like 2.9 times more likely. So like, yeah, you could still get a call back with a 1-page resume, but you just look more professional with a 2-page resume. There's ways in different sections you can add into the first page to help it get longer, and you can just keep adding keywords, and it like just enriches your presentation and they prefer it.
Okay. And is within that longer resume, does that necessarily then mean that I'm going to include all of the relevant jobs that I have? Or how do you view that in terms of what I should include job-wise on a resume?
Yeah, like the thing with the format of the resume, so like the first page is really for like, you know, your headline, the title, the professional profile statement, like in areas of expertise, your correct contact information. That's like a big thing. People put the wrong number or email, never get a call back. Like that's the one of the biggest problems. But people don't proofread. But after you have like the skills pretty much all together, all of the ones that are listed on the job post, then you just have like a short project achievement section. You can say anything, you can make anything an achievement. Just going to work, showing up, going on time, you're increasing productivity. So you can like say things like that in different ways. But the second page should just be the work history and the education, the certifications, or the training. So if you've had like 10 jobs, you don't need to put all 10 jobs. Like you can put about 3 or 4. I usually tell people just the last 10 years of work history, so you look more fresh in the job market. Like you don't have to talk about the 80s. You definitely don't have to talk about the 90s. You don't have to talk about the early 2000s. Like you don't, because like they don't, things have changed. So even if you were amazing in 1987, tech is here. It's not going anywhere. So like everything's going to be different. Like you don't have to talk about how you know how to fax and stuff. Like they don't, most people aren't going to make you do that. So it's just a way you want to be relevant in today's time, especially with the virtual age that we're in now. And then you just kind of make it look strategically fitting the company's views with your format. So like if you use like 5 bullet points, 5 bullet points, 5 bullet points, that's like pleasing to the eye so that they can scan it. It really isn't like put all your work history there. They don't care. They really don't care. They want to know, like, what does this presentation look like? And what are my thoughts about the work ethic of this person based off their resume?
Right. And what's your thinking on how to, you know, if you have had a gap in your employment history, because maybe you are a parent and you took time off to raise a family, how do you address that in the resume? Do you just not include the dates that you worked at particular jobs, or how do you deal with that?
I definitely tell people to beef it up. You never want to showcase any kind of gap. I get a lot of questions about gaps from like stay-at-home moms. And it's like, oh, you know, I've been a stay-at-home mom for 15 years. You know, how do I address that on my resume? You don't. You don't put that. You definitely don't tell them you're a stay-at-home mom. You definitely don't say anything that will get somebody to look at you like, oh, you don't work. Like it's a very dog-eat-dog world. It's very elitist in hiring. Like they want someone who's like a pack mule. So you kind of make it seem like you've never not worked ever. So you can say, this is what I usually tell stay-at-home moms or just anybody who just hasn't been working for whatever reason, but that you're doing freelance consulting work, you know, in whatever industry you're trying to get into. So let's say you're trying to be an office manager. You have been inside of an office, even though you've been a stay-at-home mom. Like you've answered phones, you've sent emails, you sent text messages, you've done a calendar. You probably like run your kids back and forth from school to wherever they're going, any kind of club, any kind of event, music, show, concert, it doesn't matter. But you know how to run a schedule. You know how to get places on time or pick people up, order lunch, all of this stuff. That's office management. That's executive assistant work. That is virtual assistant work, which is cool because now, but cool in general, because you can do it from home. You could be a virtual assistant for like 5 people and get 5 checks all throughout the week, you know? So you can just say, like, I usually tell people, you can say you worked at Upwork, because like they're not going to be able to fact check that you are a freelancer. And maybe you're not getting paid, but you're still working. You're still developing skills. Everybody's on social media in some form or fashion, usually. Some people aren't, but that's fine. But you know how to run a social media profile. You know how to run all kinds of different apps. You have all these apps on your phone and you're doing every single one at the same time. So if somebody gave you a job to run a Facebook or a Twitter or a YouTube or an Instagram or TikTok, you could do it. So there's no reason to be like, I don't have any work experience. I haven't worked in 15 years. That's not true.
And how do you address it? Like if someone does that and then they're lucky enough, fortunate enough to get a call in for an interview. And now you're face to face with someone and someone says, tell me about your experience in that thing where you sort of were creating a favorable impression of yourself. What mm-hmm. would you say in a live interview when someone asks you to elaborate on that?
I say, I've been a freelance consultant in this industry. Basically, what I've been able to do is increase social media profiles and productivity levels by over 15% for all of my executive clients because I work diligently on audience participation and improving all of their analytics through the back end and their algorithm boosts. Everything that I'm saying is true. It's just, you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
I am doing that. Like, I do that. Scrolling at all, you're boosting somebody's algorithm. You're on Instagram making Instagram money. Like, you're making somebody money out there doing something. Like, I tell all my followers on TikTok, like, we'll go live and stuff, and I'll give them tips and tricks. I'll basically answer back interview questions because everybody asks up, like, what are they asking in an interview? Like, this is what you say, because it's true. Everybody who follows me on TikTok or even see any of my TikTok videos, they have grown my business for me. They've done the marketing for me. They do it every time they comment, post, like, subscribe, scroll, share, follow. Anything that has to do with my TikTok, if they even see it, they're increasing the analytics on the my back end. So when I check my analytics, I'm like, oh, sweet. I got like 50,000 new followers this month or this week or today, which is happening, which is wild. It's like, great. They're building my business. I need more eyes. The more eyes I have, the better, because it builds my business for me. So if you're one of those people, you are building my business. You are increasing my analytics. You are doing audience engagement. You're the audience.
So it sounds like I have to first change my mindset about what I'm doing and really see that I did do all of these things so that when I go in for that interview, I feel confident that, yes, I can state this and it is true. Mm-hmm. How much do you, because we've probably all seen job postings where they say you must be able to do this, this, and this. How much do we sort of creatively exaggerate what our experience or skill set is for specific things they ask for in that job posting?
I say go big or go home, usually just because so many people reach out to me, especially in my like DMs on Instagram, about how like, oh my gosh, I'm about to be evicted and, you know, the pandemic and I haven't had a job since March 2020 and my kids, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, you don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. You have to make your resume fit the job vacancy announcement if you want that job. Because the people who do that are getting the callbacks. Like the company tells you exactly who they're going to call back, who they want to hire, who they want to interview, and who they want to give money to. So if you don't show up and act as that role every day, you're not gonna, you might land the job, but like maybe they fire you or something because you're not doing what you said that you could do. So learn how to do it, get trained on the job, make your resume match and show up to that job every day as that person. So it's very like, I always tell people resume writing is creative writing. You gotta get creative. You gotta like know how to market. You have to know PR. You like have to know how to use like psychology to get somebody to believe and have faith in you. But if they say, oh, we need somebody with 5+ years of experience in data analytics, amazing. You have that. You analyze data every day. So like, it's not like you're like really stretching the truth. I mean, you're honestly just telling the truth. You do data analytics and you should make your resume match it because I'm not going to call you if you don't.
Tell me about when I'm writing the resume, you've talked about the importance of looking at the job posting, looking for keywords, and then making sure your resume has those. How much are we writing our resume for analytics software to go through it? That's a big part of it now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a big part of it. That's what I train like my writers to do. I train on TikTok, but I train everybody in videos or just information that I post, content, LinkedIn, everything. What you do is you read the job post, like you just read it. And then all of the bullet points that they list, like, you know, this is what you can expect, or we're looking for somebody who can do this, or if you have the expectations, the objectives, whatever it says. If you copy and paste those bullet points for the new job into your old work history bullet points, and then kind of like jazz it up, it's called wordsmithing in the resume writing industry. But if you just you know, change the verbs, change the tenses, change the nouns to fit. Like if they say, you know, we're looking for somebody who has social media management experience with content development. Say in your bullet point, you're going to say like, uses strategic content development techniques to increase social media management analytics for the brand. You know, like you change it so it doesn't look like you copy and pasted everything, but you still have the word content. You still have the word development. You have social media. You know, they're definitely looking for social media. And they're looking for somebody who kind of appears as if they've already done the job before so that they can replicate that success at their company. That's your goal. So you do want it to be, I say like over 90% the same. Like you want to make your resume match and mirror the job vacancy. Not 100%, because then they'll be like, okay, they're just copying and pasting everything. But if you switch it up really strategically, they won't even be able to tell that you did that. You just look like the ideal candidate. And that's why people are getting calls.
And I'm assuming then what happens in this process is the software flags the ones that appear to be a match for the algorithm. And then they give that resume to the people who, the humans who review it and go, oh yeah, this looks like a fit. Let's either advance it to the next stage. Is that how that happens?
Yeah, it goes in a pool. So the ATS software, it's an applicant tracking system. And a lot of them have been like updated. There's old ones that like, if you have color on your resume, it might mess it up. And there's all these people saying, well, you can have color. That's not true. You're emailing your resume anyway, so it doesn't matter. You're bypassing the ATS software completely when you email it. That's why I focus on that, because it's more strategic. But even if you are going through the ATS software, if you are getting it scanned, if you are going through the job portal, if you have the keywords on there, it is going to scan it and be like, oh my God, a match. Put them in the pool. And then you go to this other pool, which like, I don't even know what the exact percentage is, but I know it's like low. It's definitely less than 10, but I know the percentage of people who actually get the callback, the interview and the job offer is less than 2% of people who apply. So
less than
2%, because most people don't know that you have to switch your resume to match the title. You should have a title on your resume that matches the title of the job, regardless if you have it or not. So most people are just hitting that, like, you know, that button, that one click apply all. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen that. So many people do that because they're like, oh, great, I applied to 100 jobs today. I'm doing a good job. No, you're not. Like, you probably aren't going to get a callback from any of those jobs because your resume is too generic. So once you make it match and fit, less than 2% of the whole entire population is doing that in the pool. But once you're in the pool and then human eyes are on it, you're still only spending about 6 to 7 seconds or less, even just like kind of boom, 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 quick scans. And if you have the keywords, if you have the title, if you have the years that they're asking for, they're like, great, call them back. It only takes like 3 seconds to look at a resume and be like, yeah, they look like a match. So it's quick.
Right. And just a couple last things on when I'm creating the resume, I assume that if I have volunteer history, like say as a parent, maybe I've done work in volunteer organizations, that's, I'm going to frame that as work that I've done and look for the most positive way to describe that. Like if I was head of a booster group or something, I can say that I manage an organization with these many people and this budget. And is that, that's how I can sort of frame something like that?
Amazing. Yes. I always get that question about volunteer work. And I usually tell people, don't make it seem like it's volunteer work. Like you don't ever want to showcase that you work free on your resume. Like they're going to take that and probably exploit you. And they even like, ooh, maybe we can lowball them because they like working for free. Clearly, always volunteer work. Just say, yeah, you manage the budget. You're the treasurer, fundraising organizer. I used to be a fundraiser. But like things like that, it sounds good, you know, like managing the excess expenditure budget, decreasing risk through different types of fraud, security, whatever you want to say that makes it seem like you will help a business grow their brand, their money, make money, save time. That's what you frame everything around. Volunteer work or not, you know, you don't have to tell them.
And one last thing on the question of putting dates on and stuff. Should I omit dates, and especially ones that like might, if I say I graduated from such and such college in this date, should I leave the dates out so that it doesn't necessarily age me in someone's eyes?
Let's say you are a professional who graduated in like 1999 or something. Maybe you don't need to put 1999. Like you could just put what your bachelor was or something. honestly, at that point in time, some places need you to put the year or they require it. Make the year 2015. And once you get in there, you can, they'll see you, or, you know, you could, you, once you're in the door, you could talk yourself into anything. There's so many opportunities right. once you're in the door, but like, you want to get in the door. The problem is so many people don't get in the door. So like, you can make the resume, you could take the year off for the age discrimination part, because it's huge in the hiring industry. Age discrimination is huge, especially in tech. And I work in tech too. So definitely taking the year off will help if, you know, you're not in the ideal graduating year. But for the years on the work experience, you can play with those. Like, if you only worked at a company for like 6 months, but it's like a cool company and it's relevant to where you're working, say you worked there for 2 years. It doesn't really matter. And then everybody's like, what do they do the background check? Most people are not doing the background check. But if they did, you can say that you started off as a freelance consultant there. And then you got on the, you know, and then you moved into like a W-2 role or something like that. But you don't have to put the months either. Like, let's say you work somewhere for like 8 months or so, just a short amount of time, but it was like at the end of the year and then you quit at the beginning of the year. You could just put, you know, 2018 to 19 or like 18 to 2020 or something. So it kind of blurs their knowledge of like how long you stayed there, because people do nitpick. They're like, you know, you job hop. I say, no, I don't. I don't job hop.
All right. So I have a general resume that I've created with these guidelines in mind. And then for each specific job, I'm going to do a tailoring for that job where I look at the job posting. I pull out the relevant keywords, drop it in. So now I've got a copy of that resume that's specific for that job. How important at that point when I'm submitting the resume is the cover letter? And how do I make that distinct from the resume? What should I include in the cover letter?
Yeah, I always get cover letter questions too, because I feel like everybody hates them so much. Like, everybody wants to abolish them. There's always these like polls on LinkedIn. And yeah, I think people just don't like writing the cover letter because they don't know what to put on it. And you can just have a script. Like, the secret behind the magic with getting hired and resumes and cover letters and, you know, career services in general, nobody's really reading any of your stuff. Like, that's the thing. Like, and it gets, I think people get so annoyed with that too. But you have to think of it like, anytime somebody posts an opening, there's either like 200 plus to like 1500 plus people just sending in random stuff. Like, some people will send in like not even a resume, just like something odd. And there's so much going on in the back behind in the portal that they really don't have time to like sit there and read word for word every single thing. That's why they had the ATS. So after you know that nobody's actually reading your resume, it kind of makes it easier to get hired because you just need keywords. You could put the exact same information in your cover letter that you put on your resume and just kind of like dress it up to be like, you know, I'm super passionate about this specific industry. Let's say it's tech. I'm super passionate about the tech industry, and I believe that I'm the best fit for this specific role because I am an expert in this field. I know how to do data analytics. I work with internal partners and external businesses all of the time on their tech projects, and I'm able to decrease their inefficiencies because I know exactly what to look for. And you can just keep going and going and going. Like, you could just, you know, big yourself up. Like, you, that's resumes and cover letters. It's not a time to be humble. Some people don't like bragging, but it's not bragging. You're trying to get a job. Like, you're trying to get a job, or you're trying to get someone to give you money.
You know what I feel like? I'm hearing you talk, and I'm seeing so much the value of what you bring, because I think most of us are personally uncomfortable with bragging about ourselves and being creative in the way that we describe us. We're like, you're just dispassionate. You're like, yeah, this is what you have to do to. And so let's talk about how great you are. So I definitely see now why someone is going to, I think they're going to benefit from using someone like you who can sort of step outside and say, no, we're going to brag about you now. And that's how you get the job. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, I've got the resume. Now let's talk about the job application strategies. You have sort of multi-step process that you use when you're working with clients. You said your first step is to do a social media scrub. What am I doing in a social media scrub, and why is that important?
Yeah, social media is, it's great. It's this cool thing. We're on it. We can vibe with people all over the world and learn things and things we've never seen before. It's pretty wild thinking about how it's evolved into this realm and this world that we're in. But it is breaking some people's entire life apart. Like, people post way too much information on social media. They're thinking that nobody can see them. Like, I feel like that's one of the biggest things. People don't really understand that, oh, we see you. We see you out here. We see what you're talking about. And when you are applying for a job, I'm going to make like a top five list of things that like keeps people from getting a job, because that's a great piece of content that people should probably read. One of the top five is your social media. Like, they are looking at your social media and they're seeing you just say ridiculous stuff or posting things that are just strange things. I mean, people are doing crimes and not thinking that people can see them. They'll post them like committing any kind of crime or like, oh, you know, people who like, I don't know, just boost or something, and they like, maybe they steal phones and sell them. They'll post that whole thing like on their Facebook and their whole family's there. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Do it if you need to, whatever. But why are you posting it? Like, why are you, does it make sense? Or, you know, this whole scam, those like PPP loan things, and people are like taking pictures of them doing it and posting it. Why would we hire you?
Yeah.
Why would we hire you?
Yeah. So I can't believe this is a first in the podcast where I'm saying, so if you do a crime, don't put it on your social media. And if you did, take it off when you're applying for a job.
Take it off. Like, one, I don't know why it's there. But if you, for some reason, wanted to show people that you do that, take it off. Why are you keeping it up there?
Yeah. I mean, it's just smart if you think about it. Going back to one of your original points is, put yourself in the position of the person who's considering hiring you. Like, if you look back at your social media and you're like, huh, I post a lot about like getting wasted on the weekends or boosting cell phones, you know, stuff like that. You go, is someone going to want to hire me? And if you see those things, take them off. I'm assuming we believe then that if I remove that stuff from Facebook or Instagram or wherever it lives, that these companies won't still be able to find it. Is that true?
You have a better chance of just feeding into the fact that most people are a little lazy. You know, most people are a little lazy. Like, they might not hire CIA to like come look and scrub through your entire, maybe if you're applying to be in the CIA or something. But like, if you're trying to work for like, you know, government jobs or something, you know, that might be a little different. If you're applying to be like a hacker or something, I'm sure they don't care, but I used to be a hacker, but that might be a little different. But like, if you're just applying for like, you know, a project manager position or something, maybe like a cool tech job, maybe Google, maybe you're applying for Meta or Facebook or whatever they're doing now, you know, if you have some stuff on your social media that's just like strange, and maybe like, I don't know, maybe you're like a serial cheater or something. You just like cheat on all your wives or your girlfriends or something. Maybe delete it. And like, and then, you know, if it's just like a clean profile and maybe you're just like, okay, my birthday, here's my dog, they're probably not going to look into it any further. Probably not going to look through all of your comments or all of your photos or whatever. Some people are a little nosy, and maybe they do, but you have a better shot just making sure at least your like profile looks cool. One little cool sweep and you should be okay, you know, but that's a scrub, like scrub it. Definitely don't have anything just in the front.
Okay. And so when I'm ready to apply, what's the best avenue to do that? Cause I've seen you say that if you can get your resume directly to someone at the company, but how do you think about the strategy of the way that you apply, like going through a job board like Indeed or something like that? Or do you try and get it directly to the company site, or do you try and get it to an actual human being? What's the best strategy there?
I like to hit multiple strategies. So I have a whole like applying strategies tab on my website. And I also have like a whole playlist on my TikTok, like how to apply to jobs and just do like strategic tutorials, because there's so many things you can do. But I like to hit different places. So if there is a posting, because like even if there's a posting for job, that means that there's even more no postings at all. Like most jobs hire internally or through word of mouth, through their own networks. So if you want a job, you just send your resume anyway. So there usually are so many jobs available for hire that you won't have a job portal to apply to because they don't post anything about it. So always try to do the job portal, definitely do the application, do the whole process, the song and dance. But then find an email. Like you can just go straight to the company's website, hit their contact button or tab or page or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then there's usually either like an info at or just, you know, like for questions, comments, concerns, you can even call them and be like, hey, what's the email address for the company? You can pretend you're like a customer and you're like, I want to send da, 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 da. Be sneaky, get an email, find an email. You can Google it and be like, you know, you can put the company's address in and find when they like submitted their information to become a company. And usually that's a good way to get some information, some like insider intel on like what their email is, or just Google the CEO's name and put the word email after it in quotation marks. And that'll like bring up all the consolidated hits on that search engine to find the CEO anywhere. If you find their LinkedIn, a lot of people put their contact information in their about. You could find a recruiter, an HR manager, someone in operations. I don't care who it is, honestly, anybody that works in the company will worry because they have some type of influence. Get that resume out there some way, somehow. If you can't find anything, definitely do the calling. But you want to at least do two. You at least want to hit some type of job portal, some type of email, and then make some type of connection with somebody that works at the company. Like you need to increase your chances. That's like the big part of the game.
Right. And you mentioned LinkedIn, that's increasingly a big part of the strategy too, right? Whether you're not only creating your own profile on LinkedIn to be friendly in the hiring process, but you can use it to find those people. What are a couple of things that I can do to use LinkedIn to my benefit when I'm looking for a job?
Yes, LinkedIn is huge just because there's so many jobs on there. Like so many people don't have LinkedIn profiles set up because they feel like they're not professional enough to have a LinkedIn. People are talking about their dogs and their cats and pumpkin pie and stuff on LinkedIn too. Like they're sending memes and videos and all kinds. It's just social media, you know, it's just a social media account. You don't have to be like some CEO to have one. Anybody can have one. Everybody should get one because there's jobs on there. So definitely professional profile picture. I would say try to get as professional as possible. I took mine on my couch. I just staged it really well, but get something that looks like, you know, professional. Having a banner that is relevant to your field, it does wonders. Mm. If you have a banner of just like where you live, like that's okay too. But let's say you're trying to get into the medical field or something. It's like a healthcare manager or something. Mm-hmm. Put a Google like healthcare background in the images. Like that's what we do when we build client profiles. We'll just do like, you know, hospital background or doctor background, medicine background. If you're trying to be a lawyer, put a courtroom. If you're trying to be in tech, make it look techie. Put some coding on there, something. Make it look like the Matrix or something cute. So that when somebody comes to your profile, they'll see your banner. It's the biggest thing on there. So they'll see your banner first and you look like you kind of fit into their need. It's like more, it's resume psychology. It's career psychology. It's more like getting someone to feel like you are a good fit for them and what they're looking for. So banner, profile picture. And then my biggest hack, biggest trick works well. It got me a job. This is how you get jobs without having to apply to them. If you just put the job titles that you are interested in your headline, as if you've already done them, you already have them, you're already an expert in that field. When recruiters, I used to be a recruiter, I've had millions of jobs, but when recruiters are hunting, when they're headhunting out there, trying to find people to fill their open positions, they type in the title of the job they're looking for. So if they're looking for a finance manager, they just type in finance manager. All the people that have finance manager in their headline get shown on their radar first. Like they're not really looking through a bunch of LinkedIns that are like not filled out, that don't look like they're even being used or anything to like piece together a puzzle to see if you would be a good finance manager because you used to be an accountant in 2008. They're not doing that. But if you tell them in your headline immediately, oh, finance manager, you could have never had that title before in your life. But if you tell them that's who you are, they're like, oh, you're who I'm looking for. And they'll offer you an interview. You skip the whole application process altogether. That's how I got my tech job. And I'm a resume coach and a career coach at a tech company and help people break into tech. But I had the word resume coach in my headline and they were like, great, you're who we're looking for. Do you want a job? And I was like, sure. easy.
So if I'm thinking along those lines, finance or maybe marketing manager, if I put marketing manager in my headline, mm-hmm. people that are looking for a marketing manager are going to see that before somebody else's description.
Yeah, that's why I've gotten a lot of clients and a lot of followers across all social media, not just TikTok, but everywhere, hired because they're like, oh my gosh, after you did the LinkedIn, I have so many recruiters in my inbox now offering me interviews. So I'm like, yeah, because they don't want to like go through your resume and stuff either. Like if you're already looking like the person that they are wanting, skip that whole middleman thing and just be like, great, let me shoot you up to my HR manager. Let's get an interview together because they get that commission off of you. So it's like a scratch my back, you know, da, da, da. But it's more like, we're going to make this process go by so quick because let's move the resume out of the way. Your LinkedIn looks great. I see your picture. You look professional. You're who I'm meeting. We're about to both make money off of this. So that's how you get jobs like very underground.
So let's say I've done all these things and my resume is out there. I followed the strategies you're talking about. How long, and I know every job is different, but how long would you typically expect to wait to hear something if you've done things the right way?
So like when I'm doing all of these tips, like that's how I started doing everything. I took my own tips, made sure they worked. I woke up the next day and I had job offers in my email, you know? So like, it really shouldn't be taking you that long. I've had people reach out to me in my email too, like which is like success messages and stuff saying that they got a call back within 10 minutes. I've had people get callbacks within an hour. There's one time I applied for a job like late Sunday night, got the call back Monday, had the interview Tuesday, accepted the job Wednesday, started Thursday, like within just less than a week. It really shouldn't take you over like 2 weeks. Honestly, if it's taking longer than 2 weeks, it's helping people start getting aggressive and calling them, showing up to the company, banging on the door. Being aggressive in a job market is fine. Like there's nothing wrong with that, especially in my opinion. And before I even started doing this, like I would be calling people all the time. Like I would be like calling 5 times in a row. I'm like, hello, hello. I need the status of my application. I don't care at all. I'm aggressive. But some people feel weird about that. So they don't. But the statistic on the job market is it takes the average person about 5 months to completely replace their job. It's because they have no clue what they're doing. Like people think that's normal to take 5 months. Like you have rent for 5 months and you haven't been working. That's weird. That's not okay. Like, are you not starving? Like, how are you making ends meet if you haven't worked in 5 months? It really shouldn't take you 5 days, to be honest, my opinion.
Okay. One last question in terms of the overall process. A lot of parents who have kids where maybe like in my daughter's case, she's going to be graduating next year. Do these strategies work for college graduates as well as, you know, people that have seasoned experience working in the world? Or is there anything that you would advise a college graduate to do different or specific given where they are in their job history, which is, you know, for many of them starting off?
I always tell college students and clients to go even harder than everybody else because they're being looked at in this way, like, oh, you don't have any experience. You need to get an internship. You need to work for free because you don't have any experience, which is completely wrong. I usually tell college students, especially ones who, you know, maybe they just went to college because, you know, they felt like that was what they were supposed to do. And they kind of don't know where they want to go yet, but they're graduating and they're like, okay, I'm going to get my first real job or my first salary job or if that. Social media. Y'all are on social media. Come on. Like I usually tell them to go towards social media marketing or PR jobs because I've been able to get a lot of current grads, recent grads, even high school students who are like about to graduate high school, good paying jobs in social media management or marketing at tech companies because they're looking for those types of people because they're innovative, because they're creative, because they're young. The smart people who own tech companies know that the kids are the ones who build the world. They know that they're the ones who are building social media. I didn't know how to use TikTok at all. My friend is younger than me. My best friend is the one who told me to get it and she had to teach me how to use it. And when I worked at the daycare, the kids were the ones who were like, do you have a TikTok? I was like, no, I don't have a TikTok. What are you guys talking about? But like, they're the ones who are growing this like billion-dollar industry in social media. So people who use younger people as their marketers, their website designers, their content developers, those are the ones whose businesses grow hard and quickly because they're the ones who are like on the streets knowing what's cool, what's innovative, what's happening, what's new, the trends, they're creating the trends. So all of the young people should be in social media, should be in marketing. And there are so many high paying jobs for that. Like she wasn't even a client. She just took my free tips and she got this super cool job at Google and it's six figures and she's a social media marketing manager. It was just wild. Like she was like crying on her Instagram story. She's like, oh my God, my life is changing. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. I was like, yeah, now you have a job at Google. Like literally taking some free tips. Now you have a job at Google and you're getting out of poverty.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I love that because I think it's often we can come at it from the perspective of what we don't have. So like a college graduate can be like, I don't have work experience. But what I hear you saying is you just got to reframe and go, what do you have? And what you have most likely for many of them is experience with social media, which is what a lot of employers value because they're closest to knowing what those trends are. So that's a great way to reframe it. Yeah. Last thing I want to ask is, because I think you have some interesting perspectives on how the pandemic has changed the way we think about work and especially remote work. Are there more possibilities out there now because employers and employees have been opened up to what remote work can be? How do you see the next couple of years in hiring and remote work and how that's changed things?
I see it skyrocketing. I know, and I have talked to a lot of business owners and people who either their business is gone completely because of the pandemic and they absolutely just lost everything. I've seen people grow, especially myself, but grow an entire business out of the pandemic because of the specific things that they were able to do. But now, if you don't have like a remote option, I know people are doing hybrid and stuff, but people hate hybrid. Like they want to be remote. Like, so that's what I help people do. I'm a remote work specialist and I help people transition to 100% remote work where they make more work, they make more money doing work that they were doing before, but just at home because you could do multiple remote work jobs. And a lot of remote work jobs, they don't require you to clock in or, you know, set a specific time frame. You might get paid like per week. Like I pay my employees per week. And it's just like, get the work done. I don't really care when you get the work done. You can work at 4 a.m., 4 p.m. You can work 1 hour one day, 10 hours. It doesn't matter. When the work is done, the work is done. And you get paid because you're doing your job regardless of when. And that is what people like because there's so much freedom there. So many people have realized that they have saved money by not having the brick and mortar, getting rid of it completely and just having, you know, they're not having to pay for the insurance of having the employees in-house. You don't have to pay for the water. You don't have to pay for electricity. You don't have to pay for any of that. And if you could just be remote, and if you're just on the computer all day anyway, if you're just in an office, if you're just, you know, doing sales or something, you have an entire remote or digital business. You're saving money. It's complete gain. Like there's all profit, honestly. Pay for your website. You know, maybe you're paying for like Calendly or something, but that's nothing. And especially if you're like having a business that is growing globally, like you can get people all over the world doing this. So I know a lot of people who are American or even, you know, Canadian or anything, speak English, who have gotten jobs in like the Philippines, like their job is in the Philippines and like they still make money even though they're getting paid through that, like just through the conversion. I've had people get jobs in Sweden and I think Hungary, I can't remember, but there's other places around. I've seen people get jobs in like Switzerland and stuff. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, I work at this like company abroad, but I still get paid and it's fine. And it's chill. Like, I think it's cool.
So we're closer than ever to this sort of dream scenario that some people have where they're like, I live on the beach and then I do my work a couple of hours a day. In fact, I know someone that was what he did for a while was he went down to Costa Rica and worked from Costa Rica and had a great experience there and did his job remotely. So yeah, I mean, that's, again, one of those ways if you reframe it and look at what's positive about this, there certainly are positives. Yeah. Andrea, for people who want to know more about you and what you do, where can they find you? I know for sure TikTok, and I'll make sure we link that in the show notes. Yeah. But what's the best way for people to reach out to you?
The best way to reach out to me is on thecareerisland.com. is my business, The Career Island. You can email resume@thecareerisland.com your resume, and we will hook you up with an entirely new life in a career you don't have to escape from, because we're remote on the island. It's a remote island. We're remote. I live on the beach now and chill and be on TikTok and just run around, and you can definitely do that and make money. It's easy.
I love it. I love it. Well, Andrea, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Yes, I appreciate you too. This is fun. Thank you.
That's all we've got for this episode of the Your Turn to Fly podcast. One thing that would really help both us and other new potential listeners is for you to rate the show and leave a comment in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you tune in to listen. Also, make sure to link up with us at yourturntofly.com/blog. On social media, you can find me. I'm at Thor Chalgren. And please just share this podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. Until next time, remember, believe that you can do greater things still.